Hey, Heather here. Designed to empower individuals to be their best self, the Ron Kitchens Always Forward Leadership Podcast brings fresh understanding to the issues today's leaders are facing and equips them with new perspectives and resources to lead forward. Welcome to today's conversation with Ron Kitchens and Brad Lominick.
Hey, thank you for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Ron Kitchens and always here with Brad Lominick. Hey, Brad.
Hello, people.
I'm really jealous. I got to tell you, one of my favorite people is Christine Kane. And you got the opportunity to spend time with her, and so much time, we're actually going to do two podcasts with Christine. Tell us about what we're going to hear in podcast one.
Well, you're right. Christine is a force. She's like a tornado of good that blows through the town and everybody is impacted by her. And she is a speaker, she's an author, she's a founder of an organization called A21, which basically fights human trafficking. It's anti-slavery, anti-modern-day slavery. She talks about the story of really why she's doing that in this conversation. One of the other things about Christine is that she is a leadership junkie. You know, you'll hear it in part one and really in part two as well. But she's a leadership expert. You know, she's led in lots of different environments and lots of different organizations. She is Greek by background and by heritage. She grew up in Sydney, Australia, now lives in Orange County here in the U.S. She's got a family. Nick is her husband. She's got two daughters. But she is a force. And I can't wait for people to hear from her. Again, this episode really focuses in on a lot of the why and the how of A21. And the thing that she's built that she's most known for throughout culture and around the world. And this may be your first time to even be addressing or hear a conversation around modern day slavery. The idea that there are organizations that exist that are fighting against human trafficking. But, you know, this is one of those things that we need to all step up and both be aware of as well as get involved. So can't recognize or really be more of a fan of what Christine's doing than we already are. So enjoy this conversation. This is a sit down with Christine Kane, part one.
You are a friend. You are a longtime leader, influencer, activist, author, speaker, teacher, communicator, evangelist, entrepreneur. How many other nouns can I give you that describe who you
possibly
are?
Possibly my two most important, wife and mother.
There you go. Yes, you are the wife of Nick Kane, and you all have, I would say, in many ways, arguably influenced this generation of leaders and of the global church, but also the global landscape of influence in probably as many ways as anyone. And I want you to jump in and describe what life looks like and talk a little bit about A21, which is one of the organizations that you've started, and give the listeners just a little glimpse of the behind the scenes.
Sure. And firstly, thanks for having me, Brad. This is just a great honor. I do get to wear a lot of hats, which is great. I think each one fits my multiple personalities. So it means that all of me has great joy. But I obviously, together with my husband, which in and of itself is quite a unique thing, we lead the A21 campaign. And we started that 10 years ago. And we help to rescue the victims of human trafficking. We have 14 offices in 12 countries around the world and several hundred staff all around the world that we employ to engage in this fight, which is, it's a privilege, it's a challenge, but it's, you know, one of the things that I think I'm here on the earth to do. So we are seeing great breakthroughs there. I also oversee a women's leadership training and development organization called Propel Women. And it's really to help activate the passion, purpose, and potential in women and to see them, you know, really flourish and thrive as leaders in every sphere of life. So that in itself is a wonderful organization, still very at the startup phase, but growing exponentially. And I could see a lot of women very hungry to really, really fulfill their purpose and their destiny and step up into their leadership potential. And then, of course, I have a weekly television program, which is very geared to spiritual health and development and equipping and empowering people to overcome adversity. I have a lot of challenges that I had to overcome to be where I am today. I've had to really step over a lot of obstacles and hurdles and didn't have the best start in life. So I love to encourage people that perhaps haven't had the best start to through my own life to say you can overcome adversity and fulfill your destiny. So I think a lot of my resources, like my television program, Equip and Empower with Christine Kane, that's what it's called. And then I, you know, publish books and have a lot of different literature that goes out. A lot of that is geared to helping people overcome adversity and step into their purpose. But what really consumes a lot of my life is helping to oversee and lead the A21 campaign. And of course, you know, we're involved with everything from prevention, awareness, investigation, to aftercare and education. And so, you know, when you're in 12 different countries of the world, you've got a lot of different cultural things to navigate. People at different phases of the development process when it comes to advocating and standing up against human trafficking. And so it's been great because I get to do a lot of work in schools, in universities, especially with law enforcement, with governments. We get to help write laws, change laws, and put the bad guys in jail and help to free those that are trapped in slavery and help them to start on a path towards just being healed and made whole and, again, you know, become great active contributors into society. So it's there's never a dull moment.
And why A21? I mean, of so many things that you and Nick could have been involved in, could have given your lives to, could have been passionate about, what was the why behind the start of the organization?
And I love all forms of justice. You know, I've always been an activist of sorts. But I think for me, it was the timing of all of the global injustices, and there are plenty, when it comes to human trafficking and people that are just caught up in and sold into sex trafficking and involved in forced labor trafficking. I think just the buying and selling human beings for economic profit, it just grates against everything that I am, everything that I believe. And I think so much of my own past, Brad, to be honest, you know, when I first saw a poster in an airport in Thessaloniki, Greece, where it had a group of children and women that had been the supposed victims of human trafficking, there was one little girl's name, her name was Sophia, in the poster. And I had just given birth to my second child, and my daughter's name is Sophia. And I remember in that moment when I looked at that poster at baggage claim in Thessaloniki Airport just over 10 years ago, suddenly I wasn't looking at somebody else's daughter. I wasn't looking at somebody else's child. That could have been my Sophia. And I just started weeping in the airport, just standing there by myself waiting for my bags at baggage claim, just wondering what her mother must have felt like with her daughter lost and her daughter being taken and her daughter being sold into sex trafficking. And I realized in that moment that I could never look away again. You know, once you see, you can never unsee. And I think it went from being someone else's child to it could have been my child. The minute that little baby became my child, it changed everything. And I realized that, you know, I had been at that time involved in international speaking and teaching and traveling at that time over 20 years. And so I had a great global network of relationships. And, you know, your resources are always in your relationships in life. So finally, there was a reason for me to really begin to see how I could interconnect those relationships and leverage them for good to help raise awareness for this issue. I didn't have any idea it would explode and become what it's become today. But I knew, although I couldn't do everything, I had to do something. And so I started with where I was, with what I had, which was a mouth and a network of relationships. And so I just began talking about it. In every talk that I gave, no matter what I was talking about, I would always weave in this story of what happened to me at this airport. And out of that started the A21 campaign. The first year, I went around looking for other organizations. I thought maybe I would become a spokesperson for someone because I knew that I had a speaking platform, but I couldn't find any organization that truly resonated with some of the core values that I had that were very important to me. And I think part of that was just I was supposed to do something about it. And yeah. I was like most of us, you're kind of looking for someone else to do something about it. And you're like, I'll follow you. And this was one of those, I was not looking for something new to start at 40. I already had a global speaking and teaching organization. I already had plenty of staff. I'd just given birth to my second child. When you're 40 and you pop out another kid, you deserve a purple heart. You're not looking to start something else. And so it was not something I really was looking at doing, but I was already at that time literally speaking to hundreds of thousands of women and young people a year on every continent of the earth. So I knew that I had a voice that carried and I had credibility because I'd built a platform over 20 years. And so people would trust me. And then I had to go on a huge learning curve because I knew nothing about the ins and outs of human trafficking.
So the average listener to this podcast, wherever they are on the spectrum of understanding trafficking, understanding forced labor, understanding the issues that you are wrestling with on a daily basis with A21, how should they get involved? Because this is something that many of us look at as a problem in culture. And we all agree, we all raise our hand and say, we need to do something about it. Many of us don't know what to do. What would be your advice or your suggestions on the first step we could take to be part of the solution?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because there's no point just moving people's emotions. Sometimes you can overwhelm them so much that it just leads to inaction because people think that the enormity of the problem is so huge. How could I ever do anything? And I think, you know, for everyone, and I say this because, you know, for 10 years now, I've been giving people next steps. One of the first things that we did, and I'm so grateful, is that we put 21 steps on our website going, if you've clicked into this, it means you're ready to educate yourself first and foremost, which I think is very important. And secondly, let us make it easy for you. Here are 21 things you can do today. Everything from writing something to your local government representative, to being involved in a practical way somewhere in a community near you, to giving financially, to helping. There's 21 different ways, some financial, some non-financial, so that everybody has an entry point. And I think you've just got to take the next right step. So I would say to everyone, go to a21.org, check out the 21 things you can do today and find one of those that you can do. There is one thing that everybody could do. Click on that one thing and take that next step. And what I've always found is that next step is going to lead to the next right step, to the next right step. Everything that we do at A21 is geared towards helping normal everyday people in their everyday busy lives be able to make a small difference from wherever they are. So there is a plethora of ways people could get engaged with this.
Another angle to this, which I would love for you to speak towards, is lots of the listeners who are part of this podcast and are connected to Ron Kitchens and Always Forward and Southwest Michigan First. And they're in different parts of the country. They are helping create economic opportunities for communities, for cities. What would you say to the business leader or to the marketplace professional to make sure that they're being really aware of this issue and the way they do business, the way they make decisions? Is there any specific things that you would challenge them with?
I'm so glad you asked that. The whole campaign that we are rolling out, it's coming out January the 18th. The Attorney General showed the initial campaign to, he had a major meeting last week with every law enforcement body in the country, and our campaign got rolled out to them to prepare everyone for January the 18th. But this will go airports, businesses, and it's called If You See Something, Say Something, Can You See Me? Mm-hmm. And I think the better we educate, so what I would say to business leaders is you would be surprised that this is often happening under your nose and you don't even realize it. Up your supply chains, through your distribution chains, sometimes depending on the corporation, the city that you're in, you know, even within your own ranks without realizing it, you may not be aware of it, but there's some inherent flaws in the system that allow this sort of thing to happen. And then certainly whoever's listening to me, whatever city you're in, either that city or the city next door to you, it is happening. It is right under your nose. And so again, I would say go online. We have some fantastic videos, and we're rolling out a whole campaign in America starting on January the 18th called Can You See Me? If you see something, say something. We rolled that campaign out in the UK too, and it really went through the business world over the last, we're in June this year, so it's been going 6 months, there has been an increase of 600% prosecutions and convictions for forced labor trafficking since we started that campaign, because people suddenly are becoming aware. Because I think most of us, and particularly in business, because of course it's economically driven. Slavery always is. It's a supply and demand issue. I mean, we're talking to the right sector here when we're talking to corporations and business leaders, because the whole deal is an economic deal. So I think that the more we can become aware where it exists and begin to shut down those places that allow trafficking to happen and slavery to exist. And what has to happen is we have to make it more of a liability than an asset. I'll give you one case that we prosecuted in Greece. I'll never forget it. It went to the Supreme Court and the judge said to the trafficker, "Why do you traffic in women?" And the trafficker, and I mean, I'll give you the edited version for the sake of the podcast, but he said, you know, well, because the penalty for trafficking women and children is less than the penalty for trafficking drugs and armaments. And with a woman, she's just like a dog. You can tell her what to do and kick her until she does it. But the very fact that I would get off more lightly if I was busted trafficking drugs or armaments than I would trafficking human beings, there is something inherently wrong with that legal system. So we've got to begin to change that so that traffickers will think long and hard before they get involved in this business. At this point, it's low risk, high return. So we've got to turn that around and make it high risk,
That's
low
good.
Return.
I can't not have you on the podcast without asking you a few leadership questions. Because
sure,
you are
yes.
so good and so refined and so experienced in leadership. You speak on it. You write about it. You've got a number of books that you've written that are not just inspirational and helping people overcome things, but also just have incredible leadership wisdom. First question I would maybe ask is, with a global organization like A21, talk about some mm-hmm. of the challenges of leading not just the emotional side of that kind of organization. The work you're doing is incredibly heavy, but also the challenge of people being all over the world. You're in, I think, 14 countries. You have people everywhere.
Yes.
You've got lots of different partners. What are some of the things leadership-wise that tend to come up again and again that you have to wrestle with?
Evidently, you know, I think the fact that we're across so many different countries is there are lots of cultural issues. I'll give you a simple one. It's funny, but it shows you the kind of thing that can derail you if you're not careful. You know, there's a reason why Greece bankrupted the planet, and that is because they like to run business in a way that is not economically viable, full stop. And so
that is your heritage,
you know,
too, by the way. That is your heritage.
Yes, I'm Greek. So I say this with love because my first language is Greek. I was Greek before my big fat Greek wedding. So I have a lot of love. I have a Greek passport. And so I say this with love. But I remember when we first opened an office there. And I mean, this is just so typical. So normally in Greece, there's a 3-hour siesta in the afternoon. And so I remember the team, like, so I've got offices all over the rest of the world where people are working a full work day and working very hard and working very consistent. And I just remember the team there just absolutely mortified that we would think you would have to work an 8-hour working day. I mean, I won't unpack it here for you, but there's a reason that they bankrupted the world, because the way it all works, you have to end up paying 14 months for only 11 months worth of work. By the time you give them a whole month off for August and you give them a whole month. I mean, I just remember sitting there thinking, here we are all on mission together. And I've got North America that, you know, has 3 weeks annual leave and the Greeks that maybe work 3 weeks a year. And so trying to kind of navigate, you know, how that works. And of course, we've got offices in Warsaw, Poland, you know, in ex-Eastern European bloc countries and in France, which is always an interesting deal. And then, you know, here you are with what's happening in North America, then offices in South America, in Australasia, Australia, Thailand. And so one good positive factor is that because of globalization, because of the internet, because of the connectivity. There are certain things that just cut across culture, which is fantastic. And because of technology, we can stay extremely connected all the time. We hire mostly, I have over 200 millennials on my staff. So we, you know, we work very actively with the next generation. And so good, bad, and indifferent, that's pretty universal. What I do realize is a lot of that stuff is you're just working with a generation at a particular time in a very globalized world. And so there's a lot of similarities as well. There's a lot of passion. But the only way this works for us is that you have to remain mission-driven. You have to remain passionate. You have to be willing to be uncompromising on your core values, which means I've had to make some very tough calls. Very deeply pain. I'm very relational by nature. I believe in people sometimes more than they believe in themselves by nature. I'm always going to call out the best in someone. But the fact is that, especially in the last couple of years, we've had to scale as we've gone more and more global, as our staff has increased. You know, we can be flexible on certain things, but certain things that are the culture of A21 or the culture of Propel, we cannot make exceptions in any case. That's what I've actually found. The longer I go on, the more ruthless I am about that, which means at times I've had to be prepared to, you know, let people move on to the next thing that is ahead for them if they're not going to want to come where we're going in the way that we're going there.
Yeah, that's good. And I know you have a incredible sense of loyalty.
Yes.
Talk about that as a leader, because a lot of us would say that's something from an older generation, that loyalty is not needed anymore. It's based on the season I'm in. Talk about why it's so important to you.
You know, here's what I can say. I'm 50 years old. I'm leading, you know, several global organizations, and I've still got millennials lining up to work with me and for me and still listen to me. So I'm figuring that there's got to be some, I don't think this is loyalty is not a generational thing. Loyalty is just a core value. It's like commitment. There are certain things that are generational. There's certain ways of working and technology and flexibility and just thinking that I think, you know, I'm still relevant in as much as I continue to change and morph and grow. And I'm always in a learning environment and I'm willing to be flexible. But I think to be an effective leader, you have to be equally as unwilling to be flexible on certain things. And where I'm seeing some organizations are not going past the 10-year mark is because they're being flexible on the wrong things and they're being loyal to the wrong things. And I've had to work this out because I am extremely loyal. You know, I think in so many, it's displayed, you know, throughout my life in terms of my commitment to places, my relationships with people. I have very long-term relationships. I've been married to the same guy for 20 plus years. I'm been a part of the same faith community for over 30 years. I'm very loyal. And if you're my friend, I'm Greek and we're part of the mafia. So, you know, there's no way out of the, you know, once you're in the family, you're in the family. So I will take a bullet for you. I am that loyal. But I'm equally as loyal to our purpose and our core. And I think sometimes when you confuse the two things, then you're going to get into trouble. So I've got to be more loyal to the future than I am to the past. I've got to be more loyal to the integrity of the mission and the vision than I am to any single person's individual agenda, no matter how much I like them, no matter how much I love them. I can't be making a job because I like a person. They've got to fit into the flow of where we are going. And I think the case of learning to be loyal, it's always served me very well. I've always found that if I am loyal with what job my boss ever gave me, I ended up doing far more than I ever could have imagined. And what I'm looking for in my team is I'm looking for that loyalty. I want my staff and my team to be like a founder, and I want them to have a founder's mentality, and I want them to love my baby like I love my baby. I don't want them to come here and say, wow, Chris Kane found me. So I don't want to be finding them. I want them to be behaving like a founder. When I see that kind of loyalty, it would be like anyone. When I have someone come and look after my kids, I don't want a babysitter mentality. I want someone that's going to love my kids like I do. I don't want them to think, well, the time's up. Christine's not home yet. I'm just going to leave the kids at home. They can feed themselves and, you know, lock the doors themselves. I want someone that's going to love my babies. Well, I've got to say it's the same thing with this. When you are running this kind of NGO, when you're involved in something that is not profit-driven, it's people-driven. When you are running something where truly the lives of human beings are at stake every day, somewhere in the world, and that the work you're involved in is very dangerous. I come from a background of, you know, I was sexually abused for many years of my own life. So for me, there's only one degree of separation between me and one of the victims. And so I carry in my heart the emotion of what many of these women and children are feeling, the sense of despondency, the sense of, is anyone ever going to get me out of here? Is anyone going to come and help me? Well, I want people that are committed to those people. I want team wherever they are in the world. And we look after them very well. We have fantastic psychological support for them. We look after our staff from a soul and mental health perspective extremely well. And so I know that I am 100% committed to my team. So I expect nothing less than 100% commitment from them. Not everyone's going to stay forever, but the one thing my team knows very clearly is while you're here, you're here. Mm. And if you're here, I want you to be all here. And the moment you are thinking of not being here, then you just need to be honest and integrous enough to just go, because I need people that are with us all the way. So that kind of loyalty, I think you will be promoted in my organization way more for your loyalty than your gift, always, 100% of the time. Some of the people that have got the most senior roles, they got qualified for those roles formally a long time after they were already operating in those roles because of their loyalty.
And that is a really good lesson for so many of us who are in between, or we're in that place of, why do I need to be faithful to this spot? Why do I need to keep showing up and digging the ditch and doing the hard work? And because you are proving yourself worthy way before you ever get assigned that worthiness, right?
Absolutely. It's got so little to do with the job that you're doing now, and it's got everything to do with what I'm thinking for you for the future.
That's great. One last thing, you know, you mentioned working with so many millennials, and you're surrounded by them. You speak life into them, not only on your team, but you speak to thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of millennials, of young leaders, of 20-somethings around the world. What would be your advice to those of us who are leading millennials? Because you get this question all the time. But what are the one or two things that you're finding to work well in terms of leading them?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I think there's a couple of things, you know, and I've been involved with young people for my whole 30 years of organizational life. You know, I ran the largest community-based youth center in Australia for nearly a decade in my 20s. And then, you know, in my 30s, I ran a very large youth movement through Australia. So I've always worked with that demographic. It's quite interesting. At 50, I'm actually having a resurgence, especially here in America. I can't think of a major arena youth conference that I'm not speaking at this year, next year, the last 5 years. You know what I mean? So I actually speak to well over 100,000 face-to-face millennials every year. And what I find with all of that is that my relevance has got nothing, like I still don't have a tattoo on my body. So obviously that's not anything that makes me relevant or not. And so, you know, I'm pretty hardcore, anyone that knows me, but I think the fact that I'm legit and I'm still here and I'm still, you know, I still have the same fire I did when I was, you know, ranting and raving in my 20s, it's still here at 50. And in fact, I think I've got more credibility than ever because I do call them to a higher purpose. I think human beings are human beings. So first and foremost, you've got to value the inherent dignity of every human being, period. Now, the title millennial, and I know there's so many books written, we've all read the articles, I think there's one thing about understanding that we're living in 2017. So, of course, there's technological things to consider. There's cultural things to consider. Society has moved on so many different issues. And so, but that's no different. If you were talking to me in the 80s, I would have been saying the same thing to you. And in the 90s, you know, if those of us that have been around long enough, it's just this is what it is now in 2017. So people would have said, we call them millennials. People would have said of my generation, you know, they're so out of the box and they demand so much and they don't have. So my deal is that you've got to pick what's the non-negotiable. So again, I come down to what is the only thing that has made any organization thrive throughout the history of organizations, what has made me get to where I am today. And it's not really whether I've worked 3 hours from home and 5 hours in the office, or whether I used an iPhone or an old typewriter. What it came down to is, where are you on things like commitment, faithfulness, loyalty, integrity, character? They're the non-negotiables. So to me, they're the things. I don't care what sort of computer you want to use, if you want to wear holes in your jeans or if you don't. We can work out what the best practice is in terms of where you're going to work from. But here is what's not negotiable, and I'm going to call you to a higher standard, because there is so much in you. I believe, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. So much has been given to this generation. I say that in the most positive way. I think they are uniquely wired up, and because of the interconnected world in which we live, the technological advances that we have, the way this generation has been educated, we're poised now more than ever to truly do good on the earth and to mobilize a generation of young people to do absolutely exceptional things. But those things will not happen because of technology or creativity. It's going to happen because of commitment, faithfulness, loyalty, integrity. At the end of the day, that's the only thing that's going to get them to where they want to go anyway. So if I say, hey, I believe in you, I'm committed to you, I am so for you, but you're going to also have to trust me with the process involved. And sometimes I'm going to say right when you're going to want to say left, I'm going to say go when you're going to want to say stop. But if you trust me, I'm going to help you get way further than you ever thought you could have gone by yourself. And I think if they know you're committed to them, they're going to stick with you.
So good. You are an author. You've written a bunch of books. You're the queen of the uns. Christine,
yes, I am.
Undaunted, unstoppable, unashamed,
yeah.
And I think you've got another one.
I have a devotional called Unshakable coming out in a couple of months, and then my big book coming out in May is Unexpected.
Unexpected.
So there you have the five uns.
The five uns. Yeah, I love it. I love it. And for anybody interested in more information on A21, A21.org, they can also check out Propel, which is the website. Tell us again the website for Propel, which is
propelwomen.org.
There you go. Propelwomen.org. ChristineKane.com. You are a firestorm, a tornado of goodness. You're doing such amazing work. Just, we acknowledge that. We are inspired and encouraged hearing from you. I want to give you the last word. You got the last word with a bunch of leaders. So fire them up and encourage them as we go out.
But I think the last word, actually, I could turn that back on to you. And I think what I want to say to the leaders is, you know, really be committed to opening doors of opportunity and never be threatened by anyone else. It was actually Brad at the time was running an organization called Catalyst. And I was very unknown in certain circles here in America. I was still living in Australia at the time. And A21 was just still very new. We were like still a startup, probably in year one, maybe the first 18 months. And you courageously took a huge risk on a chick from Australia that in your circles, no one knew really in that part of the leadership space that you were running. And you took a risk, and without really knowing me, you know, in any intimate way, but you took a risk by putting a woman up there. You took a risk by showcasing A21 and really helping me to launch the whole concept of human trafficking and slavery and the fact that it was wrong. And I think in many ways, you could take equally as much credit as me in helping in those early days to raise awareness about this issue when nobody was talking about it. I mean, today I'm so grateful so many are talking about it, but you gave me that opportunity, and in a sector that women didn't have a huge voice in that leadership space, but you took a risk. I don't even know if you ever really got any backlash from that, but you gave me an opportunity when a lot of other people wouldn't. I was still very unproven and untested at that time, and you gave me main stage, 10,000 plus people, and said, talk about what you're building, talk about what you're doing, and don't hold anything back. And really, I've never, you know, looked back in America from that day. So a lot of that had to do with you. So it's actually quite awesome that we get to come full circle and you're interviewing me, and there's a whole lot of leaders and, you know, corporation managers and executives that are listening to this podcast. So, you know, Brad wasn't expecting this, but I think this is just a great case in point to say, I think if you've always got a generous heart, a generous hand, don't think of your leadership, don't think of your organization as a pie that only has a limited amount of pieces and you're going to try to hold on. I think the more you give away, the more you open doors of opportunity, the more you give people a step up, the further you're going to go in your own leadership when you have an abundance mindset, not a pie limited mindset. You did that for me, Brad, and I want to thank you. I want to thank you in front of everyone because, you know, you've been part of that journey then for the last 10 years. So you're awesome.
Well, thank you. Thanks for saying that. You're kind. And I agree, not because you're saying that about me, but I think the great leaders are the ones that provide and build platforms that other people can stand on. Many times that means they don't stand on them, but other people do. So you do that, the great leaders do. So thank you for saying that. Thanks for the work you're doing. It's not the kind of work that most of us would sign up for, but you are making a difference. And we're with you. We want everybody listening and this entire community to get involved. Go to a21.org, figure out ways you can support, you can be part, you can contribute, take a step. I think that's what we would all say is take a step in the right direction. You've now heard. You may have been unaware and now you're aware. And that makes us all accountable. So thanks, Christine, for your time and all the great work you're doing.
Thanks so much, Brad. It was a privilege to be with you all.
I'm still jealous. What a great interview with Christine.
Thanks for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. We hope today's insights will help you develop into the leader you dream to be. To subscribe to Ron's blog or to submit a question for Ron to discuss in a future podcast, visit ronkitchens.com or tweet him at ronkitchens.